When your brand focuses on a specific body shape, creating clothes that fit is fairly easy. But what if you're designing for specific psychographics instead of demographics? What does fit look like then? Heidi Keel is the founder of Humble Hearts Clergy Apparel. She designs clothes for female pastors and chaplains, which is super niched on both faith values and vocation, not necessarily body type. Manufacturing clothes and a business that fits has been a prayer-filled journey for Heidi, but she serves in this way because she loves it. In episode 115, hear how Heidi arrived at a size chart and a size range that fits the pastor she serves, why Heidi started Humble Hearts as a business, but it's turned into more of a hobby within her lifestyle, and how Heidi's faith values and her favorite Bible verse inspire her humble approach to running her brand. Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer, lifestyle, and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Do you want to get your designs to production without compromising your brand's fit, vision, or values? My pattern making services are tailored to help womenswear slow fashion brands do just that. You can learn more and book a free introduction call at howfittingpatterns.com to see if we'd be a good fit to work together. Now, on to the episode. So welcome to How Fitting, Heidi.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Happy to join you.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. So oftentimes clothes are described as a means for personal expression. And in the case of your business, it's almost more of a means of vocational expression or expression of faith. And so I'm curious, what is the role of clergy apparel and what does it signify?
Well, first of all, that's been kind of a learning experience for me because I grew up in a Baptist church in Minnesota and the pastors just wore their Sunday best, really. So I wasn't that familiar with clergy apparel, vestments, and the meaning behind all of it. But I ended up at a Lutheran church with my husband maybe 10 years ago. The pastors there were very casual, but I had that pastor ask me if I'd make her some things because she knew I liked to sew and I was in an apparel design program at the time. And so she had to educate me. She had to, you know, tell me about the collars, not so much the meaning at the time, but the how they were to fit, how they were to feel. And I really experimented a lot with putting that together so that it looked right, it felt good, it functioned well. And so honestly, I came at it from a functionality standpoint rather than what it all means. So there's a lot to the vestments and I truly don't understand it all. So I really try and stick with what I know. And I make clergy apparel, but I don't go beyond that. I don't do the robes, the albs, the stoles, you know, all of the coloring that's very important. And that changes between seasons and denominations. It's, I guess I'd have to say, pretty still unfamiliar to me. So I'm really sticking with garments. I'm trying to do what I know and do it as well as I can.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense because it sounds like more of the, you know, apparel background and coming at it from that side. So I know you make women's clothes, right. And I feel like female clergy who are wearing clergy apparel is a very tight niche. So how do you connect with this market or do they find you?
That has been a little bit of a challenge. I started with the one Lutheran pastor that I had, and it was really just a favor to her that I did that, but she shared my name with some others. And so little by little and somewhat sporadically over the years, I would do some design work for individual pastors. And I really love that. But the truth is, it's time consuming. And by the time I had their garments ready, I just wasn't comfortable charging them because I felt like we were friends, you know. So anyway, I kind of set that aside, or, you know, I just responded to a special request that came through word of mouth. And in the meantime, I finished up my degree in apparel design, and I ended up working at the Guthrie Theater in Minnesota in the costume shop. And that's what I did full time. Well, I guess I worked as an overhire. So when they were very busy, I worked full time. Otherwise, I was off. But then the theater shut down because of the pandemic in 2020, and I was home, kind of looking for a project. I just had time on my hands and started looking back into designing clergy apparel. And it was kind of a, I mean, it was a good time to do it because I really had time and could figure things out. And I had a lot of communication with people that I had met that could help me and guide me. But the message and the growth has been very slow, very organic. I've really had to learn about social media. I wasn't on Facebook. I didn't have an Instagram account. I just never stepped into that area. So I had to learn all that. And, you know, I started with Instagram, connected it to a Facebook page. And my first orders came so fast. And honestly, to this day, I'm not really sure how they saw it, how they heard about Humble Hearts, or how it popped up. But both of my first customers have purchased almost everything that I've designed. And so, you know, they told people, and I continued to learn how to post and respond and all of that. You know, I just kept at it. And little by little, I think it grew because the pastors that had my clothing shared it, not really because of anything I did other than, you know, provided good clothing, good options for them.
You say not because of anything you did, but I mean, providing good clothing and good options is a lot. There's a lot that goes into that. So, but that's amazing that it grew primarily word of mouth, because I feel like that's the strongest, form of marketing is somebody's recommendation, somebody you trust recommending this to you. You mentioned that there was a lot of figuring things out and problem solving and kind of experimenting in those early times when you had that time during 2020. What were some of the things that you were like playing around with and just trying out?
Well, initially I did all the design work here in my house. I did mock-ups and adjustments, and, you know, just kind of took it to the place where I was comfortable with it. And, you know, like, I would do it, I would try it on, I'd have my daughters try it on, and, you know, anybody that was in our small, you know, contact group at the time during COVID. But and so I went as far as I felt like I could. And then I eventually hired a local company to help me kind of move it forward. And it was expensive. It was kind of a hard thing. It kept, you know, the money that we put into it all came from our retirement account. And I lost some sleep over that, you know, just the money I spent, the money I felt like I didn't spend well. But it's all been a good education. But I had my son-in-law develop my website and kind of do some preliminary education on Instagram and Facebook. And then I had this local company that I worked with on developing a prototype. And that was probably one of the more frustrating pieces for me because I just didn't feel like it was coming together like I had hoped. So then I had kind of a time when I stepped back and I spent some time with the draper tailor that I'd worked with at the Guthrie. His name is DJ Grauman, and he has his own separate design studio as well as his work at the Guthrie. And he really kind of walked, I walked him through my steps. He took notes, made some suggestions, and then helped me kind of come up with a game plan for moving forward. which started with contacting a couple of my instructors in apparel design, which was great advice. And I got some really good help and feedback, kind of recommendations from them. And then that kind of set me off heading in a better direction. So, there was a little bit of spinning my wheels, but again, it's all worthwhile. I mean, at some point I thought, you know what, I didn't really waste money. I learned a lot from this experience. Going forward, I have a better idea of what I need. I feel like I can explain it better. I can clarify my expectations. And, it was frustrating, but I guess ultimately a very good experience. It led me to a good team, having a good team of people that can do the things that I cannot do well.
And exactly what you said, like the clarity or being able to articulate, expectations and what you're looking for is huge. Like it's so much of the whole, fashion design and product development process, I feel like is about good communication. And it doesn't always come naturally, especially like we're communicating something visually or something that hasn't been done before. And I imagine, a lot of people from the apparel space, they aren't familiar with kind of the specific needs of clergy apparel either. So there's that kind of like learning of what will work, what will not work for this
Right.
specific product.
Yeah, that's very true. And coming from the Guthrie, everything was meticulously made and a lot of it was hand sewn. And when I went into the production part of apparel design, it was so different. And I needed an education on that too. I didn't understand why you couldn't use three different kinds of interfacing for one collar. No, it was just, I had a lot to learn, definitely.
That brings up a really interesting point. I also, some of my first jobs were at costume shops, so I kind of had that world before I was fully in, and now I've really been in, apparel production side of things. But yeah, what were some of those things that were very different from costume making to apparel production, that really surprised you?
Well, first of all, it was the fact that, there you needed to simplify it. I mean, you could still keep your design and keep it as close to your size chart as possible, but still there is an element of efficiency that wasn't there at the Guthrie Theater, because we were working with one person who was going to wear this elaborate costume. It could be made perfectly for that individual. Whereas now I'm trying to follow a size set and measurement range. And so, there's that trying to figure that out. But beyond that, I have to say, there's something about making things available and, trying to bring it to market as well and as quickly as possible. And that has been a little bit of a timing issue for me, figuring that out because,
When to have product available to sell, kind of thing.
And when I first started out, I tried to get several things out right away and kind of abide by the seasons as much as possible. And one of the things I realized is that that's not really necessary with clergy wear. A clergy apparel, they don't need new things continually. They need a good kind of a capsule of things that they can wear throughout the year that fit well, that wear well, that are also very easy to care for, but don't distract from their message. So at first I was, I introduced different colors and different patterns and everybody was excited about it, but what ultimately they need are some really well-made black pieces. So, I always try and do that. And I might add something more interesting, more colorful, along the way. But even trying to stay with the seasons isn't always critical because if I'm mostly focusing on black, there are clergy in my area in Minnesota that need, good warm things in the winter, whereas South, they need good things, but maybe not thick, warm pieces. You know, seasonally, weather-wise, it hasn't, I don't really need to follow that. And there are important color choices for the different seasons for clergy, but they can fill that need with beautiful stoles that are made. So I don't need to concern myself with the coloring that way. And as far as timing of production, I just have to stay in communication with the woman who does my production, who fortunately is in my neighborhood. She's just within walking distance, but she's busy and she's gotten busier as time has gone on. So I just, before I jump too far into a design and gathering all of the fabric and trims and updated patterning for it, I really need to find out from her when she's got an opening for me, when I can slide in with my garments. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it doesn't happen as quickly as I think, as I want. You know, it's just the nature of the business.
Yeah, production planning is a whole thing in itself that, you know, in large companies, like there's a whole team that is just coordinating production, how to get it to where it needs to be, you know, at the time it needs to be there, and making sure all the materials are to the factory at the, you know, start of production.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a couple things that you had said that I'd love to kind of dig into more, one of which being that you said there isn't really seasonality in terms of the clothing themselves and like what, you know, how warm or cool that they need to be. Are there, I'm curious, is there any seasonality in terms of sales wise? Like when you get the most orders for garments? Like perhaps are there certain busy or slow times, you know, surrounding the liturgical calendar when, you know, clergy might be looking for a new piece to add to their wardrobe?
It is always, since I've been doing this, it's been very, very quiet during the Christmas season and Easter season. And I get that. I mean, that's a very, very busy time for the church. And so I really, during those times, I just, you know, I might post a few things, but I really kind of take back off then, because no one's going to notice me. No one's going to notice Humble Heart that during those periods, because there's, you know, it's just a very important time for pastors and their congregations. So I feel so far like my busiest time starts usually in May, and mostly, you know, it stays pretty steady and busy through, I would have to say, October. But then it quiets down dramatically during the winter. I usually try and have something new, some new, either new design or new fabric of a current design come out early February. Just, you know, just to keep things moving. And it's so funny because when I introduce something new, I might sell a handful of that item right away, but it reminds people that I'm here. And it boosts sales of everything else. So, but you know, that's been an interesting discovery for me. And the other thing that I didn't do, of course, during COVID is I wasn't out and about doing meeting people and going to different conferences and gatherings. And I really wasn't sure I wanted to do that initially, but I have found that that is the one of the most important things for me to do in providing clergy apparel, because the pastors, the clergy come to these events for all sorts of things, including restocking, you know, like, you know, gathering materials as well as clothing and vestments. And so that turned out to be a really, really important thing for me to do. And so I've tried to do that. I've tried to do that more and more. It's a little, I mean, it's a wonderful experience because it's so fun to meet people face to face and to see them in the clothing, because I always bring a pop-up dressing room with me and I have all the clothing. I bring everything I have so they can try things on and take it with them. And it's so much fun for me to see them try things on and come out of the dressing room and show their friends. And I get such good feedback from that. And so I really love to do it. But of course, that's an expensive thing to do, especially traveling. And we usually rent a bigger, my husband comes with me. He drives and hauls. So we do make a little bit of a vacation out of it because we'll try and go early and visit friends and family along the way there and the way back. But we rent a vehicle. We have a hotel during that time. And although it's very, very fun, it's also expensive, but it's worth it. I mean, it's really worth it. But I'm trying very, very hard to find ways to do that more locally. But of course, it's a smaller gathering, a smaller venue. So, anyway, that's
Yeah.
a part of the process.
Yeah. I think it's so interesting that the Christmas and Easter seasons are quieter. I would have almost expected the opposite, like just thinking about it. Maybe it's different because I'm not a pastor, but like always thinking about, okay, well, what am I going to wear to Easter Sunday? You know, what am I going to wear to like kind of these bigger, services. Where in like times, special times of the year, where I think about, okay, like, do I want to make myself an outfit to wear kind of thing? So I think that's so interesting that for the pastors, though, they're not thinking about that. They've got so many other things to think about that those are actually the quieter times. So that's really fascinating.
Yeah, that did take me by surprise. I thought everybody wants something new for Christmas and Easter.
Exactly. Yeah, traditionally we all get new outfits around that time. Yeah. Another thing that you had mentioned was, working on kind of your size chart for Humble Hearts and, how that's different than making clothes for, a specific actor at a theater. Since your brand is very, it's focused on, this vocation in the values rather than a specific fit or a specific body type. So, how did you go about developing the fit for Humble Hearts so that it would fit kind of the most women possible?
I started with the standard size chart. And I also had good feedback from my CAD instructor from school. She was very familiar with plus sizes. So she kind of helped me understand the difference and the important adjustments that needed to be made. And so I started with that information. And then as time went on, my instructor did actually do my first patterning and CAD work. And then she retired from that work. And so I ended up using a company in New York for a while. And they had some really strong feelings about, how to grade and, the sizing I should use. So they made some adjustments to it too. But ultimately, I adjusted again from the feedback I got from my pastors from seeing the garments on them. And then again, I switched one more time. I hope this is the last time to another who has a patterning service. And the reason I switched to her is because she works very, very well with the woman who does my production, and she has a much better understanding of the plus size category than I do, and that I feel like my size chart indicated, and she's made adjustments too to the patterning, and I really feel like it's right. I feel good about what it is, and it's funny because I really thought once I had it set, I'm set. I just have to work with this all the time, and I've learned that that's not true. I mean, it's important to keep improving, even in this. Even with all the measurements in place. All the guidelines in place. There's always room for improvement, but I also have to keep in mind that I'm not just designing for one body size and shape. One of the things I have found is that I started with extra small through 2X, and I actually did not realize that there was a difference between extra large and 1X. So I didn't have a 1X. And And actually, I went from extra small to 3X. I'm sorry. So, but I just skipped over 1X. I had extra small for extra large and then 2X and 3X. And so what I've ended up doing is I've dropped extra small because I just don't sell very many. I do have some, but I'm not creating more. And I'm in the process of adding a 1X to all my garments. And I'm just going to go up to 3X. I've had some requests for 4X and 5X, but I'm not going to do that at this point because one of my other goals actually is to not charge more for plus sizes. I don't, and really the reason is because I had a friend who was a plus size and she said to me one time before I was doing this, she said, "You know, I really understand why people charge more for plus sizes, but it hurts my feelings." And I thought, I don't, you know, that really stuck with me because, I get it. And so I'm not, so because of that, it doesn't make sense for me to continue to add sizing without raising my prices just for adding the sizing. So anyway, I'm sticking with small through 3X, trying to do that as well as I possibly can. And at this point, this is what, this is a goal and I'm very comfortable with that.
Yeah, it sounds like it's been quite the journey of rounds of feedback and iteration to get the sizing, both the fit of each size and just what sizes to offer, where it works for your customers. When you started, did you always kind of start with the size range minus the 1X that you're adding now, or did even what sizes you offer, was that kind of a journey that you kind of tested different things?
Actually, when I first started, kind of as I was developing the business, I had somebody ask about plus sizes. And I said, "I don't know if I can do that because I'm not familiar with it and I really need to start with what I feel like I know." But it's funny because I was just so new at the whole thing. And it hit me soon after that I don't need to know everything. And there are lots of people out there that I can work with that know way more than I do that can help me move from this to that. And so I did right away come out then with the plus sizes right away. And it was great because she was a pastor of a church near me and she was involved in the first photo shoot I did with pastors. And so it was great. She looked great in it. She was so happy. She's referred a lot of people. And it was, it's been, like I said, it's been a journey. There's just more and more I learned about what I don't know. So I'm really relying on other people who know more than I do.
Yeah, I mean, we can't do it all as small business owners. There's a whole team, and I think that's one thing that's kind of a lot of people don't realize about fashion is there's so many different hands involved in making one garment. And even as much as you try to simplify, or as small as you make the brand, like it's almost impossible for one person to do every single step of the entire process, unless you are just making one garment for one person. So I want to ask about the name. What does Humble Hearts, like, where does that name come from?
The name actually comes from Ephesians 4, verses 1 and 2, which says, "Live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love." And that's always been my verse. So it just felt like, appropriate to carry that into my business.
Yeah, so cool. And so, is humility a characteristic of, your customers, the pastors, or is it also a characteristic that you kind of run your brand with a humble heart as well?
It's more my brand, although you know what, honestly, the pastors that I've come into contact with are, I'm so fortunate to be doing this and meeting them. I mean, they're just wonderful people, but it's also characteristic of my business in that, at first I started out thinking, okay, this is a way I can make money. and do something that I love. And we've shared this on email, but just the way to blend fashion and faith is, what's very exciting for me. But ultimately, I feel like I'm not so much about sales as I am about serving. And I feel like this has been a way for me to serve them in a way that that has been not ignored all along, but hasn't provided them the options that they really need and are interested in. And so I kind of it's actually really changing my mindset on that has really helped because I enjoy it much more now than when I was thinking, okay, I gotta, I was listening to these marketing podcasts and joining these groups, and that just wasn't fun for me. I mean, I was really, it all seemed like such a chore to me to be trying to grow my business that way. And so I just stopped. And I started spending my time and money meeting face to face with groups at different conferences and inviting people to my house. I always tell my followers and people that are in touch with me that they are welcome to come to my home and they can have a private fitting. And that's been very fun. But ultimately, it's because I want to support them. I want to provide a service to them that prepares them for their work. And honestly, that's been really fun. It's been a significant change for me and this business. And I think I mentioned to you when we talked before that it started out as a business. Now it feels more like a hobby. And hobbies you do because you love them. You love doing that stuff when you have time. And I think that that shows up in how I respond to the emails I get and the requests I get. And I keep a list of all the requests. Some of them, there's just no way I can do it because it's so specific to that pastor. But I'm very careful to really follow through on emails that indicate there might be an issue with the garment, either the fit or the construction. And, ultimately, I want them to love the clothing. I want them to feel good in it. So, however, and whatever I need to do to get them to that place, I'm happy to do. And I can honestly say that doesn't happen very often, but, it's happened where a hem has come out and I got a really nice email from a pastor saying she loves this vest, but the hem came out and she tried to sew it, but she just wanted me to know. And I thought, I know how hard it is to hand sew a garment that's a knit. That just so so I sent her one off right away, and I just felt like I want to do that. I want to do the most I can for my pastors.
Yeah, I love that. And like your approach to your business, and really that the like what you said about you're serving them so that they can do their work. And just seeing kind of the it takes a lot of humility, I think, to be in that position of you're not the one at the forefront of the work. You're the one like behind the scenes who's supporting the people who, maybe are more visible up front in the ones leading the service. But it's such a vital part of the work, though, is everyone behind the scenes and who's supporting the, the people who are maybe the face of, the work more so. Yeah, that's really special. I can really see that come through in like how you talk about the business and your brand and even your, social media posts. I can tell that, your heart is really in this.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah. So has running the business changed the way you see either other people, yourself, or your faith?
I think I have learned to just relax about it. I felt so much frustration early on when things weren't moving, and I was spending money without really seeing much result. And I've just learned that this is a process. It just and I really have to. And the other thing is, I feel like I have built a group, a team of people who can really support me, and I just need to trust them. I just need to trust them. If they have timing issues, feedback, suggestions, I just really need to listen, take it in, just really trust that they also care about this business. And, mostly I'm like, am I doing the right thing? Please tell me, please show me if this is what I should be doing, or if, there's something else that I should be doing. But that, I don't think it's changed my faith. It's just been, a point of prayer. Well, since COVID, my husband is retired and we have four little grandchildren that are in town and all the parents are working full time. And, so there's just, and I, there's just a lot of things that I want to be available for. And you know what? Mostly I am, because it doesn't, I can do things late at night, early in the morning. If one night I don't get much sleep because I've got to get something ready, it's okay, because the next day I'll be able to sleep. This phase of life, the time pressures are different and they're not constant. So, it's a good time for me to be doing this.
Yeah, so you mentioned your kind of like the team that you have around you supporting you in different aspects. What does kind of like your whole process of running this brand kind of look like? Who is helping you out and in what aspects?
So I, my oldest daughter is my fit model. When I first started, I had fit models in every size. And then some of them, well, and most of them came from a modeling agency. And then once I kind of secured the size range and the measurements, then I ended up just moving to use my daughter Katie as my fit model, because she, I design everything in a size large, and she fits those parameters perfectly. So what I do really is, I see her all the time, so I'm having her try on things all the time. But I usually look now first for fabric. I initially started kind of combining the fabric and the design right away, but I think now that I have a better idea of what my designs are and how they fit and flow, I'm really looking now mostly for fabrics. And then I have a woman in my neighborhood who has a small production studio, and she will sew the samples for me in the fabric that I've chosen. And then I test them. I wash them. I have Katie try them on. Sometimes I'll wear them around, and just kind of, and or I'll have Katie wear them around just to kind of see how they feel. But mostly now I understand the fit. So it's more just testing the fabric that I spend a lot of time on now. And if sometimes the fabric is so beautiful, but it doesn't wash well. I mean, it'll wash and with very little shrinkage, if any. But then it's wrinkly, and it just needs a little touch up, and I worry about that, because although I iron, I don't know very many other people who do. So I don't want to provide a pastor with something that looks wrinkly, slept in, messy, so I really spend a lot of time testing fabrics, and it might come out fine in the test wash. I'll cut a sample of, like a 14 by 14 square, and I'll wash it and play around with it. But it's different when it's actually made into a garment. So there's a lot of testing of fabric. The last thing I've been working on, I think I'm on my fourth sample of a different fabric. It's a design that I really love, and it's been popular because it's pretty unique. But I'm just not finding the right fabric that does what I want it to do once it's been laundered. So anyway, but once I get that all figured out, then the sample is tested, and then if there are any, like registration marks or changes in anything in the pattern, additions that my production group needs, then that's communicated to the pattern maker, and she will then make those notes on the pattern. do a marker so that, I'll tell her what sizes I need and how many of each size. So she'll do a marker and then send that back. And in the meantime, I'm gathering the fabric and all the trims, the zippers and get that into production so that it's all here ready when the gal who does my production is ready to start sewing. So, and she's always got a few different things going on. So she usually gives me about a month's time in which she'll get it done. And it's great. She's really 3 blocks away. If there's a problem, I can just walk on over and take a look. And maybe she sometimes feels like I'm too close because I also just like to drop in once in a while and see how things are going. But I do let her know I'm coming. I don't just drop in, but I like to see how it's going and take some pictures and kind of, get a gauge on timing and all that. So,
Yeah.
did I answer your question?
You did, yeah. So you've got a, your daughter and group of fit models and then sample maker, and then you're doing a lot of the testing it yourself, it sounds like, and then your production person that's helping cut and sew everything. So sounds like
Yeah.
a great team.
And then actually, once I pick up all the garments, I go through them one by one and I just check them very thoroughly inside and out. And I know it's done there, but I just want to make sure that I'm very comfortable with what I'm sending out. And so I will go over every garment and then I wrap it in tissue and put it in, a sleeve so that it's ready to go. And then once that's done, then I put it on my website.
Nice. Yeah, so would you say the majority of your sales are through your website, or are they more at these in-person like events and conferences that you've done recently?
Oh, the events and conferences are the best thing that I can do for sales. But for awareness, really, it's Instagram. Instagram and sending out emails. The thing I struggle with right now is I have really good response to my emails, really good response. And I have a lot of things that are put in a cart and a lot of abandoned carts. So I'm not sure how to get that to happen. Where, I have my site on Squarespace, and of course, you can prepare letters to follow up on carts before they're abandoned, remind people that they have a cart in. And I've thought about that, but ultimately, I just trust that these pastors will purchase what they want and what they need. I don't feel like I want to remind them again about a cart. I feel like they're aware of me, they're aware of what I have, they're aware of what they need. And I'm good with that. I have most of my customers though are women that have purchased from me before.
That's
So,
amazing. That's a
yeah.
testament to your the quality of what you're making.
Yeah, I do feel really good about that. Sometimes I wonder, what I need to do to move, introduce myself to other people. But again, I feel like it'll happen. It'll happen naturally, and I'm okay with the pace.
Yeah. So one thing I did want to ask about, are there specific requirements for clergy apparel or standards that you have to follow in making clergy apparel?
Well, I'd have to say no. there are definitely, things that are important in the church and in the liturgies and in the
Tradition.
calendar. But as far as clergy apparel goes, no. I mean, I think it's been kind of enlightening and very fun. I thought at first that if you have a tab collar, that the tab collar opening has got to be very specific in size, both in height and width, and that's not the case. There isn't specification on sleeve length or garment length or color necessarily either. I mean, it's been kind of fun because there are a lot of good options out there already for pastors in the jersey fabric, and I don't I want to fill in the blanks. I want to, if there's a void, that was my goal, to provide other things, because the jersey garments are already well done. And so it's been fun to know that I really can concentrate on something and focus more on style and fabrics and construction and design. I don't need to do what everybody else is doing. And I do have a lot of people request different colors and different sleeve lengths or sizes. Or the one thing I didn't catch on to right away was pockets. And so my first dress I made didn't have pockets, and it's done well, but it's princess theme and it's a little more fitted. So there really wasn't room for pockets in the skirt part of the dress. But since then I've added pockets, and then I even added. Found out that I need a little buttonhole in the pocket so that they can have a mic pack in their pocket with the wire running inside rather than outside. So I'm learning all these things I'm learning, but it's all come from the clergy. They've always been very good about sharing what they need, what they want. And I keep a list. If I can do it, I really will try. I can't do anything fast, but I try and pay attention.
Yeah, so has the feedback you've gotten been mostly like just the pastors of their like kind of own decision reaching out and being like, "Hey, I'd really want this," or have you done anything to kind of like actively like proactively seek and ask for that feedback?
Only in person when I've been at the conferences. There's usually time to just chat about things, to especially as they're trying things on and sharing, what their needs are and what they have, what they wish they had, what their likes and dislikes are. So yeah, I mean, but only very kind of one-on-one, not beyond that.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think that's another kind of like indication of that what you're making is really resonating with people is that they're very communicative, it sounds like, and they're telling you, "Hey, like I love this, but can you add the buttonhole, or can you add a pocket, or what about other colors?" It's like they want more. They want to see more from your brand, which I think is really fun, both on, it's really helpful on the brand side, but also just really fun to be able to connect and have that conversation with people, on a human level.
Yeah, it is. It's really one of the funnest things about doing this is, they're just I'm really honored to be doing this work for them.
Yeah. So what would you say you are most proud of in running your brand?
I am most proud of really providing these women with some beautiful things, really beautiful things that, they feel good in, that fit and look beautiful, and that it allows them really to just get dressed and move on. What they're doing is so important, and I don't want them to be thinking twice about what they're wearing.
Yeah. Well, Heidi, this has been so fun to hear more of your story and really your heart behind Humble Hearts of Clergy Apparel. I have one more question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is if you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
I really am focused on making timeless garments for pastors that make them feel put together and confident and ready for whatever they may face. And I do that through really working hard to find exceptional fabrics that work with the designs, and the construction is beautiful. I'm just really proud of the woman who does my sewing and how committed she is to following through on the details that we've talked through. And, I'm just really honored to be of service to the pastors that I work with.
So cool. Where can people find out more about Humble Hearts and see the pieces you've created?
I have a website, humbleheartsclergyapparel.com. And I do have an Instagram handle. It's at humbleheartsclergy. And I try and post, oh, I don't know, I'm probably posting about once a week. There's ways to communicate with me through either Instagram or on my website. There's a contact page.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been such a pleasure.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it very much too. Thanks, Allison.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer, lifestyle, and values, sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.